We have had some very serious news around this week, including a very interesting independent review of how the Murray-Darling Basin plan is affecting communities in the north of the basin. So we're talking sort of southern Queensland and northern New South Wales.
So this report came out from the Murray-Darling Basin Authority, and what it found is that one in five people in the northern New South Wales town of Coleraine-Bray had lost their job as a result of the Murray-Darling Basin plan. So that basin plan, the whole idea was about returning water to the environment, whether it was through irrigators having less access to water or doing efficiency projects right throughout the basin so that you could restore water back in and have a healthy basin right from Queensland all the way through to the Murray Mouth in South Australia.
And at the time, it was very controversial. There was a lot of debate about the weighting between the environment, economics and social impacts, wasn't there?
And you saw people burning the basin plan in New South Wales. So that was the white hot anger that had been in there. And it's an issue that's been constantly bubbling away below the surface. You saw it in the southern Queensland town of Dirranbandi a few weeks ago. There are reports that one of the schools there had lost 50% of student enrolments. And then in this report that came out, it found that there'd been an 18% drop in that town in job numbers that were available. And so the flow on there, pardon the pun, is that if you've got fewer people working in town, then the flow on is to the school. So there's maybe fewer bus services that are able to pick up children and take them to school because there are the numbers that aren't there to sustain that work. You also saw employment fall in Warren in New South Wales by 11%. In St George, it fell by 9%. And the CEO of the Basin Authority, Philip Glyde, says his agency is now considering these findings to work out whether or not the Basin Plan has to be changed.
We're just in that right now, right in that process of making that decision. I'd expect over the next 6 or so weeks, we'll be in a position to announce whether or not there is a need for an amendment to the plan. And if that is the case, then there will be a period of public consultation, 6 to 9 months, so that the whole community has an opportunity to express their view.
In the south, they're already starting to express their view, and they say they want a report similar to this carried out in their region. So they want to look at the socioeconomic and the broader consequences of the basin plan. Down in the south, it's one of the big dairy regions in Australia, and irrigators in that part of the world are saying that they're feeling the same, if not worse, impacts that you're seeing in the north. The Wirral River Association chairman is John Lillicato.
We've got no confidence in the MDBA and the way that they do their studies. We desperately need an independent social economic study done of the Southern Connected System, and I think that it'll make a lot of people's hair stand on end when the results come out, because anecdotally, you've only got to live in these areas to know the damage that's being done. It can't continue the way it is. You can't keep on undermining the social fabric that holds regional communities together.
And we should point out that it's not up to the authority itself to decide whether there should be any changes. It can only make recommendations to the federal government.
And which no doubt will be a political absolute, insert whatever you'd like here, really.
Yes. It's going to be speaking an absolute battle. Speaking of potatoes, it will be a hot one.
Absolutely, because there's nothing simple about water policy. And when you've got dairy industry saying that they've lost $400 million directly from this sector, that water prices have gone up, the only reprieve there for water prices has been because of all this rain. You've seen the prices come back down a bit. But you've got people like Daryl Hoey from the Australian Dairy Industry Council that they're saying that it is time that both the Basin Authority and politicians recognise the impact that this plan is having.
Other groups have already got on and done the job. They don't have to start from scratch and go through an 18-month process to come to the same conclusion that these reports have already come to. And the dairy industry used ASA because that was one of the consultants and the same model that the government used in one of its own reports. There's no sense going back and reinventing the wheel on this. The work's already been done.
Yes, it's going to be interesting. I mean, we haven't talked so much about some of the irrigators that have actually received money under the plan and have made some really significant changes to their water use, and it's been a huge positive. And also, of course, we've been reasonably fortunate because certainly in the southern part, there hasn't been the millennial drought that we had back when the plan was put into place, in the first instance.
And in places like Mildura in northwest Victoria, part of what this has meant is that you get rid of the channels and you put pipes in so you can remove the evaporation. So there's lots of interesting and innovative work that is happening throughout the basin to try and preserve as much water as possible for irrigation. But now the question becomes, was the target set too high? And what is the balancing act that now has to happen between politicians and farmers out there who say that they're hurting because of it?
water equals politics at the moment, and particularly with foreign investment.
So the government back in 2013, when they were then in opposition, had promised to set up two public registers of foreign investment, that one would be in farmland and the other would be in water. We saw the farmland one come out a few months ago, which shocked a lot of people because the British were the biggest investors, where I guess we heard a lot from China, but that was only number five in the rankings. The Treasurer, Scott Morrison, is now saying that it's time for a much clearer picture of foreign-held water entitlements, and that's something they're going to pursue.
This bill requires that from the 1st of July 2017, foreign persons who hold certain water entitlements and rights must notify the ATO of their existing holdings and any subsequent acquisitions. The government will be able to establish a baseline picture of the level of foreign ownership, as well as monitor changing trends over time.
Did we find out, Brett, whether this particular register was going to be made public unlike the other register?
I think it's something they'll be continuing to get calls for. that was a big sticking point with the farmland one. You might remember, I remember Bill Heffernan infamously saying it was an over his dead body issue. And I don't imagine rhetoric like that will be going away anytime soon.
No. Now, more conversations about the perennial 2016 issue of the backpacker tax.
It does feel that agriculture is making news in the federal parliament more than any other year this year because of all these issues. And the backpacker tax one was one that lots of farmers had thought had been put to bed. The government had backed down on its plans to tax backpackers at 32.5%. They suggested a 19% rate. And the legislation was put up this week into the parliament, but Labor has come out and said they're pushing it through to a Senate inquiry to be reviewed. That's something that has really outraged a lot of farm industry groups, because they say there is now even more uncertainty hovering over the backpacker tax and when it will be implemented. This review will mean that they will report back before the end of the year, and provided it passes, everything will be in place for a January 1 start. And the reason Labor says that it's doing it is because they suggest that there are proposals in this revised package that haven't had any scrutiny, and that this is what the Senate can look at. Labor's ag spokesman Joel Fitzgibbon says that it's really on the coalition for not having dealt with this sooner, but they're going to go through all the steps they feel that need to be addressed.
Government incompetence, one. Two, the government by its own admission is asking us to vote for a tax rate which leaves us uncompetitive and will hurt farmers. And they've now tied the backpacker tax into the same bill as the increase in the departure tax and the changes to the super arrangements.
Now, returning to that story that you mentioned at the start of our chat, which was the latest foray into who's going to own the Kidman cattle empire.
18 months and it's still going. It's John that just will not go away. So the latest development, as we've been hearing, is that Gina Rinehart, the mining magnate, has joined up with a company called Shanghai Cred, and they're going to launch a $365 million offer for the Kidman properties. This is covering vast expanses of northern Australia. So if successful, Mrs. Reinhardt's Hancock Prospecting would own two-thirds, and Shanghai Cred would own about one-third. And why this has been rejected in the past a lot is because the foreign ownership stake was going to be a whole lot higher than what this proposal is suggesting it would be going forward.
And this proposal is also maintaining that commitment to keep the Anna Creek station, which has all of the defence security sort of implications, separate as well. So it's retained that.
And because the Anna Creek station is right next to the Woomera defence area, and that's why that was one of the reasons why the Treasurer Scott Morrison rejected it. Lots of pundits and lots of business experts have been saying they think that this will be the successful bid, largely because it retains that big Australian stake. Gina Rinehart is obviously very close to members of the federal parliament, and they've all come out in support of her bid. Rival bids, though, will have 30 days to put forward a case. Domacom was that one that we talked about quite a bit. They were the Melbourne group that was going to crowdfund to try and buy Kidman. They've, since Gina Rinehart's bid has come out, they're saying they're not going to pursue with a bid for Kidman. But CEO Arthur Nalmides says the company is still going to look at agriculture.
Probably unlikely for our crowdfunding campaign to reach a conclusion on Kidman. So what we're doing is we're winding that down and we're diverting our resources to something a bit more achievable. We've got a couple of smaller cattle operations where they've been in the family for 120 years and the family wishes to retain the operation and just effectively replace debt with equity.
The National Farmers Federation has been quite critical of the government with Kidman because they argue that they've been sending mixed messages to foreign investors about what type of investment they're looking for here. The NFF has come out and said they quite like the look of this current bid from Mrs. Reinhart, and Tony Ma is the head of the National Farmers Federation.
What we do know is that agriculture has a massively huge future and huge opportunities. So this should be good for the agriculture sector overall.
So everyone that could get themselves in front of a microphone in Canberra this week was talking about the Kidman deal, and all in a positive way, well, mostly.
Well, so Senator Pauline Hanson has been one of the most vocal opponents of foreign investment in Australian farms. Interestingly, with this bid, what is forgotten at times is that Kidman is already 34% foreign owned. It's largely a British stake. So this proposal that Mrs. Reinhart's putting forward would mean that that will fall about 1%, so to be 66% Australian, 33% foreign owned. Pauline Hanson, she's not backing down on her thoughts about investment in Australian agriculture from foreigners, but she is happy enough with this bid.
I don't believe any of our agricultural land should actually be in the hands of the Chinese, especially communist China. We should be actually growing the food here to produce it, to sell it, to, you know, to other countries around the world. We should be the food bowl of the world.
And of course, we are waiting as well to hear from the much rumoured sort of family conglomerate that's got together some big names in the beef industry that are rumoured to be putting together a deal, another deal, to put to Ernst & Young, who are operating on behalf of the Kidman family and empire, and more to come on that, I presume.
And lots of financial intricacies with that one because of where the bids are coming from, what that means in terms of that one wouldn't need Foreign Investment Review Board approval, which this bid will. But like I was saying, 30 days for rivals have to get their bids in, so this one is far from finished.
Now, I did have a giggle when I read this story. Apparently there's a grass named after the Federal Agriculture Minister, and it's a bit problematic.
Well, it's called Barnaby Grass because it's persistent and bred in the New England. So it was launched last year. And like you said, it's named after Barnaby Joyce. But what's been discovered, it had to be recalled because it was found to pose quite a serious risk to livestock. It seems that in the testing phase, it wasn't picked up that there's a naturally occurring fungus until a grower found it in their paddock. So what it's meant is that Heritage Seeds, the company that had this grass, has had to put a call out to farmers and say, we're here, we're ready to help, we can help remediate paddocks. And Wayne Crofts is with Heritage Seeds.
The breeding process in this collaborative project and some of the testing processes may have missed it, or the technology wasn't there to pick it up. We can only apologise to our farmers for the inconvenience. If farmers have any concerns whatsoever, please get in contact with our local territory manager, or please call our free call number. We're very keen to resolve any issues and potential risks with all of our farmers.
So from Heritage's point of view, Edwina, it's quite serious. Mm. There's a lot they want to do with it. So one of our reporters happened to be speaking to Barnaby Joyce the day it came out, and they put to him, you know, what do you think about this thing that's happening? Let's hear from the Deputy Prime Minister himself.
Yeah, obviously it causes a problem with sheep's feet, and I think there's probably another grass up at Nimbin that's named after me. You just got to deal with these things.
I don't know what he's talking about.
I just love that he banged the table and thought, yes, I'm onto a winner here. This is funny.
Oh, dear. It's those moments in news that we love, isn't it? Thank you, Brett.
Thank you.
If you would love a daily dose of just that kind of news delivered to your inbox, subscribe to our rural newsletter. Head to abc.net.au/rural.